So, welcome everybody on the last session of the day. Thank you very much for coming. It was a very long day. How was it? Good? Bad? Good? Perfect. I like TechEds very much, if it's about myself, because you've got always a chance to meet very interesting people with different cases from security, from IT, from development. So it's always really, really enjoyable. First of all, let me introduce myself, and I'm going to mention to you what we're going to talk about, and I will try to make this session a little bit more interactive, because you need to, you know, some warm-up at the end of the day. Today we've got some parties going on, so I hope you're going to be in a good mood afterwards. My name is Paula Rozsaven. We pronounce as Januszkiewicz. I am actually from Poland. But I travel to different countries, and to be sincere, I always mention that because it's at some point pretty impressive. I've been home since January only for 15 days because I'm traveling and visiting customers and several security issues. What I do for a living is actually penetration testing. So I'm more on the bad side rather than on the good side. And I wrote a couple of trainings. I'm also an MCT, MVP. I've got 11 years of experience in a security market. And this is basically my background. Additional thing that is pretty interesting is that I love Windows internals. And I do have access to a source code of Windows, which means that Microsoft kind of likes me. And at some point, if I would like to ask some question, I always ask a question to myself, either to my husband that also has access to a source code of Windows. So this is the background. Today's session is going to be related to all the situations that you encounter every day in your regular functioning, that I encounter every day when I'm doing a penetration test. And that's something that always works. And we will discuss A, problems, B, mitigations, so that we are aware a little bit what can happen to our infrastructures, maybe as a matter of coincidence, maybe not, but all the cases that we're discussing are actually the ones that I saw in the real environments. So first of all, let me present to you agenda. Agenda is actually very, very simple. We've got a couple of things to cover. The idea of hackers not being halted. Why? What does it mean? What is the reason why they're not halted? Yes, maybe it's just an internal attacker. Maybe it's an external person. So we're going to discuss, of course, that. Then we've got all the situations that are coming from the offline access. Maybe you are thinking like, okay, offline access, that's not fancy because whenever you've got an offline access, it means you can do everything. Yes, I agree. But the, I would say the juicy thing of it is that if you do that one tiny thing so that nobody else would discover that you actually did something, yes? And at some point, it will allow you to make one step further. So offline access is actually pretty interesting from many perspectives, and I would like to show you a couple of operating system breaches using offline access. By the way, I haven't mentioned it at the beginning, but I am obviously not working for Microsoft. I do have my own company that is called Secure, and I'm partner with a company that is called iDesigned, which means that I will tell you the truth and the only truth about Windows security, if you don't mind, of course. Okay, so next thing, it's related to online features. So everything that is brought to the field as an application, as a solution, you are playing with files, you open an unnecessary file, you misconfigure some server, your server is not patched, we are getting access to it. So all situations that are related to that, and then of course we will make a small summary. Okay, so let's begin. First thing that maybe it's not the thing that you see every day, I hope not, but the problem comes from that kind of situation. So can you tell me, please, what's wrong on this picture? Because all the security principles are met. Yes? We've got confidentiality. You get in there, you close yourself. Yes? Things are confidential. Things are integral. At some point, I don't want to imagine that. And things are available. Are they? You just put your hands and you got it on your server, yes? So the wrongest thing that is actually on that picture is because this guy or girl, whoever is sitting over there, it's using Windows Server 2003, to which support is going to expire in July in 2015. Should I mention to you that this operating system was born 10 years ago? It's such an old technology. And because we are using this kind of boxes, that brings all the fields, all the problems to the fields, yes? Oh, we are not compatible, yes? Oh, this specific application, not mentioning accountant department, I'm doing all this, I mean, I don't know what I'm talking about. Jump into accountant department. Ladies, yes? Oh, I need to run this database, I cannot install my software. So, at the end, you end up with a situation that this Anna, let's call her Anna, she's like a local admin on her own workstation. What is her awareness of security, excuse me? Well, so my goal for today is to show you the situations that can happen, that are happening in every organization. If you are allowing USB sticks in your organization, one of the situations that I'm going to show you can happen. If you are not encrypting your laptops on the offline encryption, on the lowest possible level, that situations can happen. And what's my goal? Is to show you what can be done by a user. What is the mitigation plan? So, what is the point of entry that we are playing with? What Anna can do? What can we do about Anna? What can we do about that kind of situation? So this is basically what this session is about. The nicest thing nowadays about security is that I always, whenever I'm doing my pen test, I always think about Windows in a certain way. It's just a piece of code. It's just a piece of code. It's going to be a piece of code. Of course, it's a pretty big piece of code, but it ends somewhere. So the possibilities that we have, even if we're discussing malware, getting inside, injecting things here, there, and so on, they're very limited. And we are living in a time in which technology is pretty well developed, which means most of the things, they were already thought through. Yes, malware can be working as a service. Yes, malware can be working as a driver. Yes, malware can inject itself in a memory. Yes, we do have mechanisms to figure it out. Nothing new. Surprise me. Okay, so first story comes from fungi and bacteria. Fungi and bacteria live and propagate in the mud and dirt around your barn. That's exciting. Whew. Okay, so what I would like to show you is a simple thing. It's a real website. I do have an access to the internet and everything is fine. I do have in the back running Fiddler Web Debugger. That's a tool that you can download online. It's a free tool, so just grab it. What Fiddler can do, it can listen to whatever we are browsing through HTTP plus HTTPS, but HTTPS only if you go to Fiddler Options, HTTPS, and you click this Capture HTTPS Connects, Decrypt HTTPS Traffic, and if you install Fiddler Certificate. Of course, we're going to be man in the middle. What it means for like us, it means that we can cheat on the website. Because if we can influence what is being sent over HTTPS to the certain server, wherever they are. So if you like horses, and if you're always dreaming about socks for horses, I got a very good news for you. Because they do have an online shop in which you can buy worm blood through bread front. Well, that sounds exciting. So let's buy one piece for $34.95. That's an expensive sock. Okay, but before I do it, one more thing. Rules, I will go to automatic breakpoints before requests. And basically, I'm going to check out what I can do in the certain packets that are flying here. And I'm going to go to inspectors and then web forms. And then I can buy some socks. So let's add them to cart. Let's jump in here. The oldest stuff that is marked in red, it's awaiting for my completion because I put the breakpoint, which means I need to modify things first before I send them to a certain server. So I run to completion. So here we go. We've got Winnie Wormers, Wormbloat, whatever front, and then we've got 34.95, one piece. I'm from Poland. We don't like expensive stuff. We only like cheap. So let's do that. And let's complete it. And let's complete it. And let's see what life brings. Free shopping, free socks for horses. Not that you need them, of course. I don't want to show you guys all the Cisco shops and like Xbox shops because otherwise probably somebody's going to give a little bit more gift from tech heads rather than Surface, but search for this kind of options. That's possible. Okay, why did that was possible? It was possible because of one simple scenario. Administrator, because these are usually IT guys, didn't really check for what was going on with the certain website before actually he published that. Let me tell you one story. I was doing a pen test for one of my customers, and the scenario goes like that. I was sitting in a hotel, bored. Actually, I'm never bored because there was always my laptop with me. So I'm like checking out what is my customer about from the outside. And they had actually a team of developers, and that team of developers were programming some application in the banking environment because it was actually a bank. So that people can check out how much credit do they have to pay and this kind of stuff, yes? So interesting stuff was that particular application, web application, was published to the web because developers wanted to see how it works in the internet, and it appeared afterwards. What is the difference, by the way? I'm not a developer, maybe you could tell me. Yeah, that's what I thought. I was able to jump into that particular application and grab the credit documents from inside the infrastructure. Who Anna was, how much Anna earns, where Anna lives, what is Anna's social security number, how much money Anna needs. So all the related situations. And that's because of the very, very obvious fact. They didn't have a procedure to pass through to publish a certain website. B, they didn't check the website. And credit documents, it's a little bit more serious thing than the socks for horses, but I just wanted to show you that small example. Okay, guys. So, let's move along. The first thing to discuss is an offline access. Offline access, that's something that is basically always available. I'm always a huge fan of the concept. If I can touch that, I can get inside. As long as, and there's a small asterisk, there is no cryptography underneath. Underneath, I mean BitLocker, TrueCrypt, and McAfee Endpoint Encryption, and all the vendors that are used to encrypt your drive. So, that's something that we use to solve our problems. Logs are too big, we've forgotten administrative passwords, we would like to grab some user's data, and so on. We would like to make a backup, jump into a certain virtual machine, maybe. So offline access is always useful, and at the same point, dangerous, if you would like to help yourself to solve some interesting problems. But that's something that is lacking the planning process. Offline access is really important, and I'll tell you why. All the time on this conference, we are discussing the very known attack, form of attack, that is called pass the hash. And that's possible, pass the hash is possible, whenever, for example, some user with a privileged account, for example, logs in somewhere to some workstation. Then this person leaves a hash behind, briefly saying, so it means that if you do have all these tiny workstations hidden somewhere in an accountant department in a corner that are maybe not perfectly managed, that's the problem. That's the point of entry. And that's something that, of course, deserves a planning process, because offline access, as I see, and this is what I see at my customers, that's something that is very often ignored. Administrator's desktop has a BitLocker, but Anna's PC has no BitLocker in it. While at the same time, Anna's PC is, for example, standing somewhere in a room that everybody can get into. Okay, guys. So, what is possible to be done using offline access is that we can inject stuff. We can inject several kinds of things that can be used, for example, to bypass Windows authentication, for instance. So, at that point, I would like to show you one simple thing. Let me jump into my virtual machine. And I do have, as you see, media attached, which is Windows 8 installation media. I'm going to start it. And I'm going to boot up from the certain media. Okay, so here we go. And what I will do, what's my plan for that? I would like to show you one thing. That thing is going to be related to A, dumping the user's hashes. So it's a very nice background for pasty hash attack. And second thing is going to be related to getting access as administrator to the certain workstation immediately. So if you forgot your administrative password, here we go. Solution is just to be grabbed without any necessary tools. Okay, one thing more. And we're in. Great. So, let me click next. Of course, this is Windows PE, repair your computer. And that's kind of funky, I think, because I am right now on a client machine. So to be able to run CMD, I need to go to troubleshoot, advanced options. Oh, and that's advanced command prompt opening right now. Okay, so first of all, regedit. But of course, it's all the same. I need to connect to the registry in the offline modes, which means I need to jump into a local machine, and then load Hive, and then I need to go to computer, find out where my operating system is. So it's on the D drive. And then I need to go to Windows, System 32, and then I need to go to config. Yes. So, then I need to pick appropriate registry Hive, which might be, for example, software. And I do it with a reason, because in software, we'll find something, whatever the name is, we'll find something that is called image file execution options. And image file execution options, it's an internal operating system mechanism to run a certain processes with a certain parameters. It's a very useful thing if you want to debug stuff. It's a very useful thing if you want to make some jokes in an accountant department. For example, replace Notepad with calculator and this kind of stuff. It's very useful as well. You should see these ladies. They're like freaking out. Help me. And the last thing is that we can, of course, recover ourselves from a problem in which I've forgotten my administrative password. So for that, I'm going to go to blah, 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 Microsoft, and then I need to go to Windows NT. So let me switch to that place. You got it. Current version. And then I need to go to image file execution options. Let me expand it. Let's make it bigger. And in here, I need to add one entry. And that particular entry is going to be called utilman. Utilman.exe. Utilman, let me check out if I don't have any typo. Utilman.exe, that's great. It's actually a very tiny tool that is used to use all accessibility settings. So magnifier, on-screen keyboard, narrator, and this kind of stuff. New, string value, debugger, and then I'm going to specify here, cmd.exe. Great. So first thing is done. The next thing is that in my D drive that I have offline, USB sticks, by the way, they're working offline, so I can attach it as well. I do have a folder that is called offline, and in that certain folder, I do have installer and malware. That particular installer
is going to create a service in a registry, where else, I would say, with a certain parameters. My particular service is going to download a piece of software from the website, run it, of course, and then what I'm going to do, I'm going to dump hashes of the users that are currently, or at least once, logged onto the certain operating system and send them to my website. So if you ever logged on, I own you. Okay, so with this positive accent, let me move to installer and installer again. And over here, I got this off-CMD. Let me open it up in Notepad so that you could see how the certain service works. In this case, I am loading a system hive in which you create services, and I am creating with this kind of geeky key entry so that I'm able to basically list some settings. And this bad one, I think we should say it badone, it's more like Italian service. That's something that's gonna download software and then run it, dump hashes, and that's basically it. And this tempreg contains all the settings that are necessary to run the certain service. If you were wondering as who the service is gonna be running, it's gonna be running as a local system, because in offline access, I can do whatever I want. If I'm gonna pick local system, here we go. Whatever, whatever. Okay. So that's basically it. So I will run off CMD, and my service is installed successfully. Now the only thing I can do is to do reboot. So continue. Yep. Not from the CD either DVD, but to the local system. Okay, so here we go. So just to summarize, offline access is something that allows us to get access to all files without any specific privileges needed, any specific permissions needed, because local security authority subsystem, it's not working over there. So this is me, and I got this tiny circle here. If I press that certain button, I am able to be a local system, and that's basically it. I would say stage is yours. So I would like to show you till that moment. Of course, we can imagine like, oh yeah, I'm gonna break stuff, I'm gonna do this, that. Yeah. But that's totally more than enough. What you could do afterwards, and that's kind of my favorite thing to do, because I like to play with internal operating system mechanism rather than some tools, to be sincere. I like to write myself some scripts that I put in, for example, startup, and I ask, hey, could you please log in? And then that's the domain admin that is coming. And it's like, sure, yes. When I'm doing an audit, it's like, oh, I would like to check a couple of things, you know, it would be very helpful. And I'm always very nice, and he's always very nice, and the discussion always ends up with some local system in between. Okay, so this is basically it. And now I can reset my password, so you can imagine the whole thing. But what I really want to show you is that I have installed here a certain service, and that particular service is communicating with the internet, and that particular service is actually saving the password, as I've mentioned, to the certain website. And let me show you if it's actually working. Let me check it out. Okay, here we go. I could open up the console. CMD, run as admin, and I could also jump to services, MSC, and that particular service, it's up and running because I've got a website in front of my eyes. This particular service is actually dumping my password, so maybe I could show you the service first. If you want, you can jump into that website. It's online, so you will see how much publishing our passwords we are. And in that scenario, I'm using the software that is called WCE. This is Windows Credential Editor, and I will refer to that particular tool several times because now it's working on Windows 8. The concept is pretty much similar to the tool that my team is helping in development, that is called Mimikatz. And both tools are able to grab passwords and hashes, obviously, from the memory of the certain workstation. And this is pretty unfortunate, because whenever, for example, somebody logs in to the certain workstation, either you configure a service that is running on a certain account and using a certain password, everything is in a place that is called LSA secrets. So imagine basically a big bag, like a gift bag. And whenever somebody wants to give you a present, they put it in a bag, yes? So whenever you've got this LSA secret, so this is like everything is in one bag. There is no segregation inside. There is nothing like that. You say, I want to see my presence. You jump inside the bag. You see all the thing. Yes? It's an architectural so-called issue. So this is basically it. Okay. The nice thing about my website is that this particular website... Oh, I'm sorry. This particular website has also a list of compromised machines. And this is, if you check out on the top, this is my host name. So if I run it, and this is the story, if I run it somewhere in the organization, on a tiny computer over there, and if at some point you as a domain admin log for that in that certain workstation once, I can wait, I've got time, just once, I will have it on the website. Okay, let me close that. And here we've got Badone, and Badone is running, and it's automatic. Perfect. So the thing is that all the things that are related to offline access are possible just because, A, I had an access to the certain machine. It was possible to boot up from some media. It was possible to grab the disk out of certain machines. It was possible to use CD, DVD, USB, whatever. So physical access, that's something that obviously requires person to be in a certain place. It might also happen in a situation that you've got roaming users. They're like traveling, maybe. They're bringing their laptop home, which means they sometimes need to install some applications. So they are local admins of their own workstations. And that also makes that particular situation possible. They're local admins. They jump into your infrastructure. They open up their laptops. You log in. They got it. Super simple. And of course, a couple of obvious things, like encryption on the low level. We were not doing any kind of monitoring through HTTP. It's pretty hard to spot, because let's say I'm saving all the passwords in a file, and I'm sending them, like in a one shot, once a month. Will you be able to discover that? And the juicy thing, my favorite thing about HTTP, is that it always has a go. It always goes out. Can you browse internet through your company? Of course you can. So that's something that is pretty hard to filter out. And a couple of things related to anti-malware signatures, but that's kind of not that obvious because all the stuff that I use was mine. So what kind of antivirus we are talking about? Antivirus against Pula? Yeah, like today, for example? No, that one will never work. So, the solution, pretty obvious solution, is called BitLocker. That's something that is available since Windows Vista. Sounds fantastic, sounds like a solution to our problems. As long as there is a cryptography, we cannot have an offline access. Well, not that purely, but let me show you a couple of things first. We can manage BitLocker through several available tools, and the interesting thing is that whenever we are implementing BitLocker, the user is not really owning a key. This is a machine that is owning a key. Of course, user can have USB stick or a pin to the certain machine or a USB stick with a certain key to access the machine, but it's still a machine to a key. It's a key to a machine. So, whenever we are in the mood for stealing somebody's desktop, and I'm always there, for example, what I will do I will figure out the way, how can I get online to the certain operating system so that I can, for example, add some keys, use some methodology so that I'm able to, for example, add the BitLocker keys to the storage of the keys on a certain machine. The interesting thing is, though, that whenever we do this kind of attack, will you notice that? Is there something wrong in adding BitLocker's key? Not necessarily. So the funny thing is that all the online hacks that can happen can come, for example, from that small, tiny thing that I had in my hand. What is that? Rubber ducky. Have you seen my pre-com? Of course you did. This is actually this kind of cheap pen drive that you got for free on the conferences that is broken like in 2 months, like made in China or something like that. But that particular key, this particular USB stick, it's called rubber ducky. Rubber ducky because it's not rubber and it's not ducky is because people wanted to name it like that. No reason. The interesting thing about that rubber ducky thing is that it's actually a keyboard chipset. So when I plug it in, it just works. Like you were plugging in keyboard, outruns, not on that level. Yes, you just plug it in and it just works. Okay, guys. So the scenario is that I do have here, this is my local desktop, some old partition. This partition, as you see, it's BitLocker. So let's say I'm talking to you during my penetration test, and you're an admin, yes? And you're a domain admin, for example. And we are just discussing a couple of things. I was like, hey, can you please bring me some documents? And then you jump out from your desk, turn back, grab something from the shelf, and this is my moment. Heart beating, but at the same time, my hand goes like that. And I plug it in. First of all, let me do one small switch. I will duplicate the desktop so that everybody can see the thing. Great. So here we go. My rubber ducky, what it does, it simply adds a protector, key protector, to your BitLocker storage, and it publishes to the web. Why not? Let's make everything public, yes? So what I'm doing right now, I'm typing stuff as if I was typing things on the keyboard. My hands are here, not over there. So what I'm doing right now, for example, I'm bypassing UAC. Why not? And you're just bringing me documents. Possible? Okay, guys, so the next stuff is manage BDE, protectors. I'm adding a whole zeros protector, possible. Zeros, that's something that's one of the protectors, the easiest protectors that you can set up, yes, if you want to steal somebody's desktop. Next thing, I'm setting up some random protector, just to show you that it's also possible. And now I've got more. Manage BDE is a tool to manage BitLocker from the command line. What I will do next, I will publish that to the certain FTP server. But before I do it, I'm in the mood for building up a script for me. I'm not downloading it from somewhere. I'm just creating it. So FTP, stderr, that name, .pl, it's my FTP server. Now you know my password, guys. It's read-only at some point. So you can get inside, but don't install any files from that place, okay? There is only malware, to be sincere. Now I do have that particular script created. Now I run it. I log in. Here we go. I created a file. I uploaded it to the FTP. Boom. Did I mention that I made some small delays in that script so that you can actually see it? Normally it's going to be like, poof. You will turn around and I'll be like, thank you. Yeah. Okay, guys. So the interesting thing is that I can always jump into that certain place, malware demo, and this BL keys that I have, this is the file that I uploaded, and As you see, these two keys are the ones that are just injected. Yeah? Okay. So, small summary. Why that kind of situation could happen? Let me switch to the presentation. Okay. Why it could happen? Only because the user was a local admin, because this is the only method for adding a certain BitLocker keys to the stores. USB management was not implemented properly, yes? At the same point, what I had a device, yes? I had some hardware ID and so on. The positive thing that I love about Rubber Ducky is that if somebody on your administrative side is going to say, no, this device is not allowed, and you can say, oh, yes. If I jump into the Rubber Ducky forum, I will clearly read how to change the hardware ID of the Rubber Ducky. And the problem persists again and again and again, yes? So USB management, it's of course a mitigation, but it's not perfect. And at some point, we were able to access the certain machine, and this was basically it. So the mitigation plan for that kind of situation is security awareness. You need to know, you need to be aware what can happen to the certain machine. If you are using USB sticks, know what can happen. Can somebody take data out of the user workstation and take it to the competition? I not necessarily need to bypass UAC. I don't have to be, for example, like an admin. It's not my goal. My goal is your value. My goal is your information. My goal is your document on the desktop. I will copy that. Can user copy documents from the desktop? Of course they can. So I will do that. And just take it somewhere. Okay. So the next thing that we have to discuss, it's related to online. So we already discussed a couple of things, why things are happening, what can happen when we've got offline access, and now it's time for online. Denial of service, even more, distributed denial of service. This is something, when I was a kiddo, I was playing with a synth loading. Yes, I had my tool, and I was firing against another computers that I had at home. I was like, ooh, how funky is that? Processor is like 100%. But now I'm older, everything is older, world is older, and distributed denial of service, even denial of service, still persists. Let me share with you one story. And that actually happened in Poland. I was really surprised by that. And I'm discussing right now a portal in Poland that is called Allegro. And it's like an eBay, but Allegro is a little bit more popular in Poland. And the interesting thing happened to them. These guys were brought down by a single man living somewhere, of course, in Poland. He decided to have fun, and he decided to make a small distributed denial of service on a certain portal. And the question is, and they were, of course, prepared. Of course, they experienced some issues because there's a lot of traffic going on. But the big, big question is, how much that kind of attack costs? Obviously, it must cost some money. We need some resources. So it must be, for example, our competition. But on the other hand, if they're going to spend for the attack $200, and if the attack costs them, if the attack is going to bring them like $100 revenue, it's not efficient. So who is doing that? And I'm playing around in the several security markets, and you can also find it out in the internet if you want. But if you want to do the distributed denial of service right now, as long as the service is not that popular yet, you can do it on your own. Just pay an appropriate number of dollars. How much is that? So the price are like different, but in general, they go around $3,000 per a successful attack. If you want to buy an attack per hour, it's around $70 per hour. I was like, distributed service. Hard to decide. Okay. So interesting thing is that whenever we are mitigating a distributed denial of service, the problem with distributed denial of service is that we are targeting two things. And to summarize it, it's super easy. We're targeting two things. A, resources. B, bandwidth. So we can either generate a lot of traffic so that we won't be able to handle any more requests. And to be sincere, the whole world is big. If everybody in the world said, okay, we're going to target that company, of course it's going to be possible. Distributed denial service in general, we should assume it's possible. The question is, how much money people need to spend to put this down? And the next thing is resources. So all the stuff that is related to how expensive is the request. Sometimes you've got a website that are like super easy, super flat, and so on. Sometimes you've got a website that is very demanding, resource demanding. Usually it's a search on the server. Yes, so whenever somebody enters the search, then our resources are going up. So let me show you one concept. For the presentation, I have prepared two things. I've got here an IIS. On that certain IIS, I do have a website that is actually very resource consuming. And we can fire it up and we can measure it very nicely using a certain tools, how much time this certain website needs to run. And I call this website a raccoon website, and there is a reason for that, because it's black and white. And as you see, the website is divided into several things, several parts. That part, it's one DLL. This certain DLL is just displaying you a bunch of numbers. These websites, and as you even noticed, they came a little bit later. They came a little bit later because I've got here four frames that are cracking a certain MD5. It's resource-consuming, so to say. Yes, I'm generating the hashes out of the words that I generate as well. I've got a hash, and I compare everything to the certain hash. The question is how much it takes. And I would like to show you guys one nice trick. If you are measuring your website, if you are afraid that your certain websites can be, for example, a target for somebody, there is a small trick to be done. F12, usually used by developers, but at some point might be also used by administrators. And if I click network here, and if I fire up that certain website one more time before I need to click start capturing, then I fire it up, I can super clearly see how much is my website? How long does it take to actually run it? So just to mention that, in here, you can see that I have fast one DLL, and that's like super fast. Maybe not super fast, but it took 1.21 seconds, and the other ones are pending. And now we've got them, 17 seconds. So it's a pretty heavy website. The interesting thing is that if you got a distributed denial of service for the resources, you need to know perfectly what does it mean an expensive request. Because I would like to use it. I would like to call it as much as I can so that you won't be able to process any more requests. So based on that simple trick, you already know what takes time. There is also a possibility to play with log parser, for example, and with log parser, you're able to list out all the expensive queries. For that, I got a log parser installed, and based on that, I got a couple of commands in my history. I'm able to display all the top stuff that is taken from IIS logs so that I can figure out which kind of query it's the most expensive query here. So for example, I can check out what kind of certain mistakes that I had. If you're going to have, for example, a lot of 404s, then you're going to find out possibly that you are targeted with a bandwidth attack, so they are hitting whatever it's possible. At some point, let me jump to this one. And in here, as you can see, slow1.dll, it's the one that took the biggest amount of time. What is the solution for that? Yes, because the problems, that's one thing. What's the solution? The solution is actually very simple. So there are several vendors available that can help you with that. But if we're discussing, for example, Microsoft, there is a module, IaaS module, that is called Application Request Routing. And that certain module allows you to implement load balancer based on the type of request somebody is making. So let me show you example here. This is my one server. This is a domain controller. And another server, it's my web server here. And what I will do, I will configure that web server to be my front. DC is going to be my back. And the interesting thing about DC is that if, for example, user would like to call for slow1.dlo, if you're calling for that, go to that server over there, not to me. So all expensive queries are distributed among the servers in your company, and all the fastest ones are running on the front. That's very robust, and that's solving a lot of problems. What is even more, if you were ever struggling with a situation, for example, X-forwarded IP, if you were ever struggling with a situation in which you are not able to figure out what is the IP address of the certain client that is making a request, because you've got a network load balancer in the front and you've got the servers in the back, that's doable with advanced logging of IIS. As long as your vendor can do it, you can do it, you can log it, and that's like a super, super simple to configure. If you've got some questions, I'm happy to answer after the presentation. Okay, so what I would do here, I do have here a distributed denial of service website prepared. So let me jump to the full screen mode. And let me basically copy, I got a backup of the website here, all the stuff that I have, except for slow1. Because for slow1, I'm going to create the rule that if you're asking for slow1, slow1 is over there. So let me copy that to that particular folder. And if I run it, I need to have first configured application request routing, and I'm doing that on a certain web server route, and I have here application request routing cache. Let me open it up, server proxy settings. With a simple configuration, I just need to enable proxy, just the simple rules, that's it. I go to URL rewrite, and then I do have here a rule created. Let me actually edit that. And I do have, if requested URL matches the following pattern, which is slow, then forward that certain request to another server. So all the expensive requests are going to be going over there. Okay. So that's something that I got configured in here. I can, at that stage, enable rule because it was disabled. And at that point, what I can do, I can basically request for the certain website. So it's on 200 on another server. And the interesting thing is that these frames that were loading for the long time, let me show you full screen mode, are actually processed on another server. It actually impacts the performance a little bit. Yep. So let me run it again. Control K, and again. And as you see, it on another server goes up. So this is a very simple mitigation for distributed denial of service available out of box. I got one customer that has the whole solution that is against distributed denial of service running only on IRR, which is very, very cool. Okay, guys, next thing. Some questions, by the way? Is it interesting? Perfect. If you said no, I will go out. Thank you. Okay. So everything was possible because it very much depends how much we try. If you're going to like heat certain server, of course it's going to die. Of course it's going to die. It's just a network. Yes? The question is how much resources somebody needs to put to be able to attack us. Okay. The next thing is related to unpatched systems and applications. And the interesting scenario that comes here is that I do have a small rootkit to show you. And that certain rootkit's gonna go to the server using a certain vulnerability. And I'm pretty sure, may I ask you one question? Who uses Java? Put your hands up. Okay, like 70% of you. Okay, another personal question. Who hates Java? That's what I was like, 99%, yes. Yeah, I'm with you guys, it's... Maybe I should not say it, should I? But everybody knows it, yes. Okay, so let me show you a couple of things. First of all, I do have here... I don't have a white gloves with me, but I promise I'm going to wash my hands afterwards. This is the Linux backtrack. Yes, it's a distribution for penetration testing, period. If you want to download it from the website, here you have. It's free, it's available. You've got plenty of tools that can do bad things, which is a good thing, of course. What I'm going to play with, I'm going to play with Armitage to make it a little bit more friendly. It's the end of the day, so Armitage is going to work perfectly. Armitage, it's basically the simple tool that you can play with if you would like to play with Metasploit, but using the graphical mode. Nothing better. You don't need to type all the stuff. It's going to do this for you, yes? So Armitage, let me run it. And on the other hand, because of course there must be some target, I've got something that is my favorite server when I'm doing my pen test. Let me connect to the certain server first so that it's going to be up and running. Yep, and let's run it. This guy, it's a terminal server. Terminal servers, in my experience, and not only mine, are the least patched servers ever. All applications are running over there. What is even more? Java is running over there. That's what we want, right? When the user clicks that link there, well, it's going to be there. And I would like to show you the simplest, the always working on Windows 8, on Windows 2012, on whatever you prefer, Linux, Unix, blah, 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 Java exploit. How surprising. Okay, so with that positive story, I do have Metasploit running in the back. I need to tell who I am. My IP address is 10.10.10.99. So I'm going to click OK. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to run the exploit that you can run. It's going to run like, it's going to work. It's going to work. I promise you that. Java signed exploit. So I'm going to search for it. Java signed. And here we go. And the funny thing is that I just open it up. And if you want to learn, Metasploit is actually a fantastic way to do it. And then I'm going to specify a certain parameters. For example, on what kind of ports I would like to connect. Let's leave 8080, or maybe let's do 666. It's going to be a little bit better. A little bit more evil Java. And URI path, let's make it simple, because otherwise it's going to be this trashy thing that you usually don't want to click on. I want somebody to click to that link. Yes? And basically that's it. Let me launch it. And over there, in the bottom, you see that the server is started. So the only thing that I need to do, I need to enter that certain server from my computer. So this is this guy here. Let me unlock it. Let me log into it. Let me enter 10.10.10.99 on the port 666. Here we go. The funny thing is that, of course, you see that that's bad and so on. But on the other hand, very often in a bank, that's something that I see because they were like writing this tiny Java application on their knees so that they can display their currency exchange rates. And people are used to that. People just click yes. Or maybe you will click no. That's great. But let's say it's just Anna and it's just working in the accountant department. So let's click run. And then we own the session. We got it. Interpreted session one open. We can connect to the certain session. And it's so nice that you can even use right-click, and then you can go Meterpreter, and then Interact, and then Command Shell. The interesting thing right now is that I am right now an admin, and I'm administrator. It's Linux, so forgive them. It's not displaying pretty. Okay, so now we are administrator. So the thing is, to be able to inject rootkit, and this is my favorite part because I'm a huge, huge fan of something that is called DKOM, Direct Kernel Object Manipulation, if it sounds exciting. So whenever you've got a kernel mode, whenever you got inside, you are able to use several techniques, for example, for hiding processes, so that you are able to influence how operating system actually works. Okay, but to do that, the thing that we need to do, we need to be able to have a system privileges. And there are a couple of ways to play with that. I am right now an administrator. Let me show you the step-by-step way. I can, at that point, connect to the certain drive with the tools that I have on my desktop, for example, so NetUse, blah, blah, blah. But I have to have that certain drive on the Z drive on that particular server. So let's just simplify it. Let me enter to my certain folder. And over there, I've got a tool that is called WCE, to be downloaded from the WCE webpage. Yes, WCE, it's a password dumper from the memory. And not only that, very useful. What I will do, I'm going to use WCE minus V to be able to list... Oh, what is it? It is actually WCE minus W. Ah. With administrator privileges, but I do have ones, that's the thing. Okay, let me do that command shell one more time. And let me switch to Z one more time. And I should be at that point administrator already. So WCE minus W. Oh, sorry, not here, of course. Yes. Oh, it's a metasploit. Sometimes it happens like that, to be sincere. Maybe I can do interact and then that. Another shell. Here we go. One session opened. And at that point, if I do that, do I have the same thing? Let me check it out. If I do this, okay, then I need to do pass the hash, which is of course the case that I'm going to do in a moment, but I would like to show you the way how we are able to grab the privileges. Okay, what is it? Did I lose my session, apparently? Yes, looks like. Okay, so let me jump to the certain server and let me refresh the connection. It happens, to be sincere, it happens. It happens all the time. So I got that server here. I'm going to log in. Yep. And I'm going to enter the certain... Ah, you know what happened? A blue screen happened. Happens. Maybe it's because of the 666 port. Nasty. Okay. So now I think it's a little bit better. Now I got you, buddy. Okay, another shell. Let me switch to the full screen again. Okay, and let me go to my drive, Z, and let me go again to x86. And let me run, first of all, who am I? Administrator, and then WCE minus V. Same stuff? Really? I'm saying V, yeah, but it's V. It's W. If I do that, okay, then I got a certain thing. Okay, so if I, let me quickly make some small, yeah. As you see here is V, so I'm able to actually dump it like that. But it says I cannot grab the DMARC privileges, which is totally not true, to be sincere. Let me actually do one more thing. Operating system, Windows, maybe Metroprotector. Yeah, you should have it already at this point. So interact, one more time, let me run it. This is the first thing, and I do have a session 2 opened. Sessions minus L. I do have that certain session, and I'm an administrator, so this should be everything. It should be okay at that point. And session minus I 2. Let me connect to the certain session. I got an interaction with that shell, and I should have an interaction with that particular session as well. And at some point, I will check out what is happening with a certain server. It's the same thing, I think. Oh, that's a demo guts. But let me handle with that differently. So I got that certain server up here and running. Yep. Okay. I got that. I got the session number 3 opened. And let me put that in a monitoring mode so that I know what is going on in here. I'll grab that certain machine. Come on. Yep, I got it. And at that point, what I will do, let me do not try this WCE one more time because I'm gonna have a blue screen. Normally it should work, but I just want to risk that. So I will just do one single thing here. Yeah, we are waiting for the connection and so on. Okay, so I'm going to do one thing, psexec, and I have here administrator's password dump already, because this is what psexec attack is doing right now. So I can delete that basically. I just wanted to show you the clear text password, but this is WCE, what is doing. And I'm going to just launch it. And at that point, I'm able to run a certain console as a local system. So login, Metroprotector, this is session number 4. So I can interact using a certain command shell. Okay, that's better. Who am I? And I am anti-authority system. That's a little bit better. We are getting there. And what I would like to show you here is actually the basic concept of what I can do when injecting a rootkit to the system. So I got that certain rootkit on the Z drive. And that certain rootkit, it's called KeepIt. It's written by Csaba Barta. Can you please change my screen? Hey, I know what? Hey, Microsoft, stop it. You guys are scary over there. Keep it. And then I'm going to load DCOM. This is direct kernel object modification. Manipulation, actually. Modification as well, but manipulation. And that's something that is allowing me to change credentials on the fly. Because I am now a local system, I can do that. And I'm going to load a couple of modules. One of the modules is going to be DCOM, so this is the first thing. And the second module that I'm going to run, it's going to be related to playing and hiding files that are on a certain drive. So fsys is the module. Okay. Another module that I'm going to load, keep it, it's going to be related to a keylogger. So keybdl. And here we go. Now when the rootkit is loaded, I would like to show you a couple of possibilities because we are now on the terminal server. So let me switch basically in here. And I'm going to run R desktop. R desktop to 10, 10, 10. And my server is 51. And I'm going to log in as Freddy. So Freddy, he's a regular user. F. Krueger and password. And this particular Freddy, I would like to show you that whenever you've got a rootkit injected, you're able to change identity on the fly as much as you can, really fluently. Okay, so this is what happened. We already know it. Freddy knows it. That's great. Okay, so at that certain point, I will open up my console. And I am here logged in as a Freddy. So this is the regular user. Freddy is a regular user. So whenever I would like to, as a user, use a certain rootkit, I need to obviously move to the certain point. And I do have this command prompt here. Let me open up a task manager. And my certain processes, cmd.exe, let me display in options, view, select columns, process ID. And I will click OK. And my process ID is 904. That's super easy. And I'm going to assign to the certain process a certain privileges. But, so it's 904. But first, let me show you one thing. Net user, net, maybe local group, administrators. And Freddy obviously is not there. So Freddy is just a regular user. The interesting thing about that is that if I run keep it, and if I run it with a certain parameters, in this case, going to be PGS, and I'm going to put in here 904 as a process ID that I would like to become local system within. Here we go. If I type who am I'm in the authority system. Oh no, it's just Freddy. Yes? Okay. One more thing. If I would like to make a downgrade, it's also possible. So I need to put here PRT. 904. And then you see that I'm Freddy. What about this kind of elevation? You like the concept? Yeah? Where can we get the rootkit from? To be sincere, I'm not allowed to share that kind of stuff. So I can tell you what kind of mechanisms we are using here. But we are not over, of course. There are a couple of things more to be tested in here. If Freddy, and that violates the very basic principle of non-repudiation, if Freddy would like to be an admin, here we go. What does it mean to be an admin? I mean, if Freddy would like to be administrator, so the certain accounts, Freddy can do it, because we've got a rootkit here. So as we remember, Freddy's ID of the command prompt was 904. If I jump in to the server in which I do have administrator logged on, I can basically open up command prompt and check out what is the command prompt's ID. But I don't know it yet. Freddy is just on his own side. He would like to know what is the process ID of the command prompt of administrator. So what we can do to that, because as you see, we've got that possibility, CMD, blah, blah, blah. So these are all processes that are Freddy's. Freddy can do a dump using a small trick that is task list. And task list, if you run it with the V switch, it dumps parameters it dumps sessions and processes IDs for every user that is running in a certain operating system, also for admin. So don't get me wrong, but this, it's a joke. It's a joke. So you're like, I cannot see processes from all users. Yeah, right, but task lists allow to do it. So task lists minus V, and then I'm going to stream it to users, F. Krueger, and desktop, and let's say process txt. So on the user's desktop right now, I should have a certain, let me close that, a certain process, and here I see the session. Session represents what I see in the user stopping here. So for here, you see that administrator session ID is number one. So what I can go to, I can jump into a session number one and search for the process. So here we go, number ones. Search for the process that is called cmd.exe, running as a certain administrator. Here we go. As you see, it's 11:48. Let me copy that. At that point, we remember that we had in our process a CMD, which was 9:04. So now, 9:04. Let me close that. And I'm going to run, keep it. And then I'm going to specify that I would like to 9:04 to be 11:48. Okay, here we go. Okay, so this is boring. Let me move to the funky stuff. So, the interesting stuff is that there is an attack in operating system that is actually called a cached data attack. And that's something that I was showing at the beginning at the pre-con, but if you haven't been there, basically whenever you do have FireWire enabled, then you have a direct memory access, which means you can replace whatever you want, yes? So the interesting thing is that you can do this also when you are online. Online, and it's only possible because of the DCOM functionality. So at that stage, what I would like to show you is that we are able basically to assign ourselves first local system privileges, but that's something that we already know, and then, so let me close that console, and then we are able to dump the administrator's password so that the administrator will log without the password at all. We will dump the memory part for it. Okay, so let me open up the console one more time. Let me check out at that stage what is my process ID. It's 900. Well, it couldn't be easier. That's great. And here we go. And then, first of all, I'm going to use PGS to become a local system at that stage. PGS and then 900. I would like to check out who I am. I am anti-authority system. And at that point, I will use BP. And I'm going to specify that I would like to use and inject search for the strings in the memory that are called administrator. Before I run that certain part, I would like to lock the desktop of administrator so that you can see what does it mean. So, lock. And if you see like switch user, I would like to log in as administrator, maybe even locally. If I type the wrong password, the password is incorrect. So I need to basically enter the certain type of password, yes? So that certain administrator, let me actually run this certain attack. As you see, I got three passwords blanked. So if I switch to the certain server right now, I'm able to log in. Have you seen that? Okay. If I'm in a positive mood, which happens, I could restore the old password. And then, if I switch to the certain server, which is our terminal server here, if I log off or lock the desktop, for example, and then if I would like to unlock it and do the same thing, I can't, because I'm not hooking myself in the memory anymore. So at that certain point, if you don't mind, I would like to summarize that situation using one small thing. Let me open it up. Okay, guys, making the long story short, what we've been playing with is all the situations that are happening whenever we are playing with security in our organizations are coming usually from misconfigurations, the lack of procedures, sometimes ignorance, sometimes we just don't have any choice. But to summarize what I said, what I did, everything came from offline access, unpatched servers, misconfigurations, eventually some configuration mistakes that were like made in hurry and so on. I hope that at the end of that particular presentation, you got your learning point. Maybe you're gonna implement BitLocker. Maybe you're gonna keep your eye on the USB sticks. I hope that it was worth to come at the end of the day. I hope you enjoy it. And I wish you all the best in the parties today. Please, 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 at the end, of course, fill up the evaluations. If you are interested in the resources, here we go. All the links, all the tools that I played with. I'm delivering a session about passwords tomorrow. In the abstract, please read it clearly, I wrote, bring your coffee. It's going to be tough because it's Windows internals, but passwords are in operating systems in many places, and we should be totally aware about that. Specifically when the user can grab your administrator's password because you use SPAL. Did you? It's a pretty popular tool, I know. Anyway, thank you so much. Please fill out the evaluations. And enjoy the rest of the day. Thanks.